and welcome to the Engineering Your Farm podcast. This podcast is produced by the Iowa State University Extension and Outreach Field Agricultural Engineering team.
All right, thanks for listening in today. I'm Brian Doherty, a field agricultural engineer with Iowa State University Extension and Outreach, and we're going to be chatting with a neighbor to the north up in Alberta, Canada for this episode. Today, we're going to be discussing a cutting-edge system that captures carbon from engine exhaust and converts it into a biologically active soil amendment. My guest today is a fourth-generation Canadian farmer and inventor of the bioactive emissions farming technology. Joining me today is Gary Lewis. So, Gary, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Brian. It's a pleasure to join you on your podcast today.
I really want to get into how this system works, but before we do that, can you just tell me a little bit about your background and how you came up with this idea for this technology?
Yeah, I'm an automotive mechanic by trade, and our family has been involved in a John Deere agency and a GM agency, and I bought our ranch here in 1984, and you know, trying to be sustainable on the landscape, and just really the question came to me, where does nitrogen come from? And as an automotive mechanic, I knew that engines produced NOx, oxidized nitrogen. And, you know, economy drives change. And that's where I started to look at the opportunities on my farm. Where can I get nitrogen from? And my irrigation motor that's running 24 hours a day, it's a John Deere natural gas motor that it puts out 6% oxidized nitrogen out of the exhaust pipe up into the atmosphere as pollution. And I decided that I would experiment with that because they took nitrate and nitrogen off the market. And when you use ammonium and urea on 8 pH soil and 8 pH water, you get huge volatilization. You might lose 80% in volatilization and losses. So it drove me to use that natural gas motor to get the nitrate nitrogen and make it into a water solution. And that experiment started 22 years ago in the fall of 2000.
When people first hear about this might kind of sound like science fiction or something that couldn't actually work. So can you just give us a basic overview of what this bioactive system is and what it does?
When you look into nitrogen fixation, it's the most important thing to drive agriculture. They do nitrogen fixation to produce the fertilizer at a fertilizer company. It's heat and pressure and catalysts and time, and they take atmospheric nitrogen, which is 78% nitrogen, and they convert the energy from natural gas into the nitrogen molecules. It takes a lot of energy to split these nitrogen molecules apart. And that's the same process that's happening in the piston of an engine. And that was my, you know, first experiment to see if I could get nitrate nitrogen, because I was growing timothy hay. And timothy is a very salt-sensitive plant. This is really where my quest to understand plant physiology at the time, because they were telling me that the customers didn't like the timothy hay that was fed a lot of fertilizer through the irrigation systems. We were fertigating on fertilizer. And so I started to study plant physiology. How do plants work? Plant physiology is all about studying if you put on too much, what happens to a plant. And so I really had a lot of questions about the agronomy was based on you put back on what you're removing, and that calculation becomes quite wobbled, because when your plants are actually doing nitrogen fixation themselves, the nitrogen's coming from the atmosphere, and that's the calculation that when you're doing your agronomy, people don't really realize your organic matter is releasing nitrogen, and there's nitrogen in the atmosphere that bacteria can engage it using. So that's what was happening, is I was putting on 400 pounds of potassium chloride and 200 pounds of urea, and I had a lot of questions about what is chloride. So I started to study chloride, and I discovered in my readings is that it makes a difference between the type of nitrogen that a plant's feeding on. The nitrogen is the biggest nutrient that a plant takes in, and if it takes in ammonium, that's a positively charged nitrogen, and that's far different than a nitrate or protein feeding. And that the ammonium is causing the plant to draw in negatively charged things. And it first draws in chloride. And that the reason for drawing in chloride is to close down the leaf from using the sun's energy and stop taking in CO2 from the atmosphere and making the leaf negatively charged, because CO2 in the atmosphere is slightly negatively charged. So the difference is when you're nitrate feeding, nitrate in the plant physiology books show you that blocks the uptake of chloride and allows the plant to take in sulfur and all the positive cations, the copper, the iron, the zinc, the magnesium, the calcium at twice the amount. And plants, you know, have evolved in many years with negative and positive to deal with the environment. So when a plant is feeding on a little bit of nitrate, to a plant, that's a signal that all the ammonium has denitrified into nitrate. And when a plant feeds on nitrate, it knows that it's starting to run out of nitrogen. So it decides to start photosynthesizing and making more sugar by its leaf being positively charged with all the minerals that are being taken up into the leaf to then photosynthesize four times more, maybe two times more, something in that category, depending on the environment. So that's what I started to practice in 2000 and 2001, 2002 to conduct an experiment on the Timothy hay to see if I could control this chloride. Because if you eat lettuce that's been fertilized, it's very salty. It doesn't taste sweet. It doesn't taste like a nutritious minerals. And that's the same with Timothy hay. If you're feeding that to dairy cattle, they're very thirsty and they drink a lot of water. And the Japanese customer recognized that. They didn't know it was chloride, but that's what I tested. It was 1.5% chloride in the tissues of this Timothy hay, and it should be 0.15. And palm trees run around 0.50. And I had Timothy hay at 1.50 because Timothy hay has no ability to block chloride when it's ammonium feeding. And so it's not sweet. It's not high in nutrients. And that's what's really happening with wheat and with all crops, corn. All plants are in different categories of salt tolerance. But that's what drove my first experiment and on the irrigation system until 2005. And I kept reading and studying, how can I put this on a tractor out in the prairie where there's no water? And I was using a lot of water with the irrigation system to make this technology work. And so the tractor method is a bit different, where it's passing over the land in 3 minutes per acre for an internal combustion engine going across the land. How could that ever influence this crop? And so I conducted the silly experiment because it just made sense. I've got to try it because the soil in the springtime has been frozen and it's coming out of the wintertime, and the organic matter is not decaying. It's not respirating at that time. So it made sense in nitrogen fixation. The most limiting thing to the bacteria in the soil is a lack of CO2, lack of respiration. And when something's cold, it's really not active biologically. It's dormant. So it made sense to take the tractor and get all the emissions from that 400 horsepower tractor and get it into the air seeder stream and bury it into the soil and just see what happens. And, you know, that's what experimenting is. That's what test engineering is. That's what all farmers are doing. They're really scientists and engineers conducting every year certain experiments. Some years they see amazing results. And then if you're really disciplined, you keep going down that road. And yeah, maybe failures are the best thing because you keep, exploring that question that you know that has some sense to it. And taking the fuel that's been combusted, it's everything from a plant that's oxidized. It's perfect microbial food. And, you know, getting it into the soil. And then from there, since 2005, I started to collaborate with farmers across Canada, 10 farms. I licensed them with the patents that I registered. And then worked with Montana farmers and worked with the Montana State University. We did about 2 or 3 years of research there in fields. And we did work with the National Research Council of Canada, funding two scientists. And they, you know, were really looking for, is this good for the public? Is it toxic? Is it hard on plants? Is it good for the soil? And all those things we passed. There's nothing in the emissions of a tractor that would be any different than the respiration in your soils. The same chemistry is supposed to be happening in our soils. And that's what's lacking in soils, is this oxidization of organic matter. It's really, when we use a lot of synthetic energy, it causes the plant to not put its roots deep into the soil, and it slows down the exudates coming off of roots, and the fungi just go dormant because ammonium phosphate is just supplying everything to that plant that it needs. And so, you know, you have to have a hungry plant, and you have to have them stimulated with this event of the combustion.
Once you figured out some of the plant physiology behind this, how did you then take some of the experiments that you did with the unit on your irrigation system and adapt that to something that would work on a tractor?
From there, you know, we went to just a dry system and, you know, cooling it down. And it's a big challenge. We work with farmers in Australia and Africa, and you get a 40 degree Celsius day or 105 degree Fahrenheit and 80% humidity. It's impossible to cool down this exhaust, and getting it into the soil. And when it's hot, it's going to come back out of the soil. And just so many things that we collaborated with farmers around the world to discover how can this be easier to use. That's the biggest challenge in agriculture. The first tractors weren't easy to use. People kept using the horse and the plow for many years until it became easier and understood. And that's really where we are today, is that we mixed now the irrigation liquid system. And that's really where a lot of scientific published papers about graphene and give us insight to go to the next patent series of solubilizing the carbon into the water. And then that method, we started because the scientific papers that show that it works with the enzymes in the microbes in the soil. It can work in the photocell to control free radical oxygen and help the plant use more of a wider light spectrum of ultraviolet light and near infrared light, and blue and red light is a bit more efficiently used because plants only use 10% of the sunlight. And so if we can increase photosynthesis, and that's what it's all about today with the technology. At the beginning, it was about getting nitrogen. And now it's about increasing photosynthesis so you get more CO2 from the atmosphere turned into sugar and extradated off the roots to feed the microbial microbiome around the root system. So that's really where we're at today.
You know, for people who haven't seen this thing before, can you explain the mechanics of it a little bit? What does it actually look like on the tractor?
Yeah, it's evolved, you know, from the very first times artists have looked at this thing and they made a cartoon with these pipes all over the place. And we still use it on our bioactive Facebook. But from there, we are taking it from, used to be a lot of air-to-air heat exchangers on there to get rid of the heat. And then we started to adopt that irrigation system in the middle, which is we call it a solubilizer, which solubilizes the carbon into the water. So it's got a liquid system there. Then from our discovery is that the liquid system now gets rid of this heat, and it's the right temperature for microbes. And so this is mounted on the front of every tractor. We're standardizing it so it bolts onto the front frame of a tractor or the front frame of a high clearance sprayer and or a swather. We're mounting it on the back of a swather and getting it under the hay cutter bar. It's got two culturing tanks on the sides that we add RO water to it. It's about 1,000 liters on this three tank system. The center tank, now we call it a fusion tank. It's where all of the chemistry from the exhaust stream is going into this fusion tank. And it's going into the liquid that gets stronger and stronger. So you're really holding the chemistry of combustion that makes the black carbon go clear. And this is what the scientific papers about graphene carbon and all that kind of thing. When it's held in this chemistry, the carbon actually turns clear. And when it goes clear, it has very unique stimulatory properties to plants as a plant stimulant. And we did discover that about 25 microbes come back alive from the diesel fuel in this fusion tank. And then we inoculate our culturing tanks with yeast and fungi and different cultures that we engineer that withstand this temperature and this pH in this fusion tank. And this year, all of our collaborating farmers are actually reculturing this liquid every day. They would empty their culturing tanks and then store that and build that up to then spray onto the crop at flowering stage. And like canola, we experienced 1,000 pods per plant when you spray this on at flowering stage, because free radical oxygen, when a canola plant is pollinating, heat blast is destroying the flower. And it's really, there could be many reasons, but some of the scientific papers say that free radical oxygen wrecks the pollen tube. And this carbon, we know carbon is used for many things. And it's like an absorbent that grabs onto this oxygen molecule and stops it from destroying the pollen tube and the photocell. And that's what some of the scientific papers are about. So if you're going to increase photosynthesis, you got to stop your photocells from being destroyed. and you have to have this little carbon in that, in the presence of the photocell. It's like an antenna that captures ultraviolet light and near infrared light and helps blue and red light work a bit better. So that's how you can increase photosynthesis up to 50%. And that's what we're striving to do.
You mentioned your carbon in your tank, you'll be coming clear. Some of the listeners are probably familiar with like fulvic acid or humic acid products. Would this be similar to that, or is this molecule quite a bit different?
Well, it's in the category because they make fulvic humic acid from coal layers and they wash it out with water. And so diesel fuel is like coal. It is a hydrocarbon or an ancient carbon source. You very well could make this from a steam engine burning coal or burning wood. But I do believe that the difference is that the combustion, it's like a very high pressure and heat, and there's a sweet spot in combustion. And I know the question would be, how about these new engines that have DEF system? And, you know, we did an experiment in California this last year on a brand new Fendt tractor with the DEF system working. And, you know, this is the uncertainty of it. We have to try. And it was soil that was abandoned. It was 9 pH soil. The Colorado River is 9 pH. The river water's going down and water is very scarce. So we did the experiment growing durum, and it was that we increased the organic matter by 1.5% on that soil in one crop in a 6-month period. And we're going to, be tracking that, but that's unheard of. And we see this in Africa, and it could well be the mineralization of carbon is sped up with these types of soils that have been depleted. And in Africa as well, we were working in soils that were 9 pH, and they had a cation exchange of 20 sodium. And we increased the organic matter by 1% every year for 4 years. And that was less than 1% starting. And we had 5% in 4 years in that soil. And it's soil that's abandoned. People can't grow anything there. But this emissions farming can actually repair soils that are abandoned and help, a salty soil and drought is the same thing. As your soil gets drier, this plant is just adjusting its hormones according to how salty the water is getting as the drought comes on, and plants adjust their hormones accordingly. And this, there are papers saying that this carbon that you solubilize can actually turn on the drought tolerant gene and the salt tolerant gene, which I believe probably is the same thing. And then the thirst gene and the starvation gene of seeds. It's a stress gene. And that's what you want when you plant a seed in dryland agriculture, is to get your plant to drive its roots down deep. And, that's just taking internal combustion engine to the next level and crossing over the land with a mobile, living, breathing piece of iron is what we're doing today. And, it's mounted on the front. It's like a stomach. They're same. Microbes are thriving there is what's in my stomach to extract nutrients out of the food I eat. And we have to get more microbiome around the roots of our plants to extract the nutrients out of the soil to get them into the plants. That plant is able to photosynthesize, up to 4 times more. And that's how you would get that, 30 tons of carbon in per acre.
Yeah, that sounds pretty incredible. So just thinking about the way your system works, so you're capturing your exhaust and pumping it into this water. So I'm assuming you're creating a little bit of back pressure there on the exhaust system. So does that cause any problems? Are there any engine modifications you have to do to the tractor to make this system work?
Yeah, that's always been our concern. And, engines are a big air pump. And there are situations now with the DEF system, there's a lot of restriction to the exhaust system. But what we're experiencing, and we heard this in many times, we actually did an experiment and, got funded in Mozambique on a lot of brand new, like 11 John Deere small tractors, 65 horsepower. And the fuel economy is improved. And now even with these large case tractors that have a DEF system on them, they have a computer that tells you your fuel consumption is like 25 liters to the hour. And we're down to 17 liters to the hour with the same job. And so it's this little bit of head pressure of this water column that's in our fusion tank. And that's keeping the turbo spooled up. So it's actually making the blades grip onto that exhaust a bit better. Because, tractors don't run at 100% power going across the field. It might be 50%. But if you've got a little head of pressure there, the engine is compressing the intake air a bit more and making it more fuel efficient. So it's exciting that really We're taking efficiencies of many angles of making that engine actually burn a little less, but burn it more completely because it's got more air getting in with the turbo. And we're burying it 100% into the soil and using that those emissions again to make the plant then draw down way more carbon from the atmosphere. Like you plant a crop with about a half a gallon of fuel, but you know, we're replacing the energy to make fertilizer could be 100 to 200 gallons of fuel to make that fertilizer. That's how much energy there's in that fertilizer to grow different kinds of crops. So if we can replace 200 gallons of fuel, fossil fuel, with a half a gallon of fossil fuel, and or we could use vegetable oil in these tractors, you know, biodiesel. So we can close the carbon loop 100%. And take agriculture to that level where it needs to be. Agriculture is about 5 billion acres of agriculture land that is managed with a mechanical system that we can use that event, and it's enough to stimulate the landscape to then photosynthesize more and build carbon in our soils again.
Yeah, that just kind of got me thinking. I'm probably getting ahead of things here, but you know, there's a lot of interest in carbon credits now and things like that. I mean, do you see this type of system being approved for something like that?
Yeah, I started the CO2 exchange 17 years ago. And it was when, you know, Chicago Climate Exchange was on and all that kind of thing. And as a farmer, I didn't agree with all the calculations that they're doing. And really, it came up to about a dollar an acre for a farmer. It's just the farmer never got the benefit of this carbon trade. So I believe that it really needs to be from farm gate, us as farmers aggregating our practices together and directly marketing that to the industry that needs to, you know, that can't reduce their emissions. So the CO2 exchange is there, CO2X.com and bioactive.com is our websites. It needs to be updated now. And the challenge is measuring the carbon. That's where agriculture falls apart. And we have some methods that we're working on. We're doing research right now to make it simple because, you know, you just can't test every acre and prove that you got carbon in the soil. Like we are doing that on every farm, have a test site. And we, you know, in the northern latitudes up here of colder climates growing, you know, cold season crops, we're building 0.5% organic matter is what we can achieve per year. And in the tropics, you know, I see a 1% increase, maybe 1.5% increase. And, you know, when you can move the dial, then that's easy. You can actually go out there and test the soil and prove that. But, you know, it's always the people paying a lot of money to cover off their carbon footprint really need to trust that it's permanent. And that's what we're working on is measuring the soil down to 2 feet deep and actually looking at the soil organic carbon that is mineral associated. And that's what some of our tests are involving because people that are going to pay, it can't just be a 1 year thing or a 2 year thing. And then the person stops doing their practice. This needs to be generational. And if the farm is making good money, then they'll bring their sons and daughters back to the farm to then practice these new practices to actually keep the generations of agriculture families on that landscape.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question is how deep you were measuring if you were looking deeper in the soil. Yeah, that's really interesting. The other question I had, just thinking about, you know, kind of back to the field here, what kind of application rate are you usually putting on with the liquid? How often do you need to refill the tanks? Is that kind of a logistical issue or do you have that sorted out?
It can vary a lot depending on the load that the tractor's on. And if you're planting corn, that's different than you know, we're planting corn and soybeans with a row crop planter. And then when you're working with a large air seeder, with our large tractor, say pulling a 70-foot air seeder, we can do 100 to 150 acres with 1,000 liters or, you know, around that carrying capacity on the front. And then we're adding in the inoculant and it varies on how much inoculant we're putting in there. So it is that... all of our collaborating farmers, that's really the only way you can advance the knowledge is having all these farmers that are communicating together and sharing what we've learned. And this past year, you know, we had such big discoveries on growing soybeans and corn and canola and wheat. And all of our farmers are very excited about what they saw this past year because of the cost of fertilizer and really just taking their landscape that is, you know, slowing down at yielding. You know, they've done everything and their yields are going down because we have very hot temperatures coming across the prairies and the heat blast. And and just seeing these plants enjoying the sun. That's so rewarding, is that these plants are not wilting to the sun. They're actually taking that sunlight energy and transferring it to the earth. And that's really what plants are supposed to be doing. When you see a big tree, it's just looking at those leaves, they're just lungs in the air, capturing sunlight and just pumping carbon to the core of the earth. And that's what we have to do again.
Do you have any information you can share on the cost of these units, or, you know, anticipated return on investment if somebody was wanting to buy one of these?
There, you know, it ranges a large tractor, 400, 500, 600 horsepower with a large air seeder. It's about $95,000 Canadian. And then we have it on high clearance sprayers, which is about $85,000 for a large high clearance sprayer that's vaping on every time that sprayer passes over to, you know, really correct the microbiome and balance off what chemistry farming is, disturbing, really. And then the return on investment is like 20x compared to, you know, when you do a time of 5 years, the equipment's leased over 5 years. And it doesn't matter if you pay cash the very first year, which is less than everyone's fertilizer bill would cover that off. But you got to look at it in a spreadsheet. And that's what we've been doing to help our farmers really crunch it for the bank. And, you know, we can have up to 20x ROI compared to one or two when you have in comparison of what your input costs are today. Because we really do replace the need of seed treatments, rhizobia treatments, fungicides, insecticides, and the fertilizer. It eliminates a lot of things as far as trucking the heavy weight of what fertilizers are, extra man on the farm. It can actually seed twice as many acres in a day because you're filling your seed cart with seed and you're out there doing the business of planting instead of stopping all the time. And that's really time consuming, and labor requirements are really hard to put a value to that, but it is there. And we're doing a life cycle analysis of all this to really get it crunched.
So just curious, the people that have got these units so far, are they mainly just for their own use, or do you have people interested in having, you know, custom work done? Somebody come in with one of these units and, you know, do seeding or spraying or whatever for them with mm-hmm. the bioactive system?
It's all, you know, in the past, it's all about the farmer adopting extreme innovation, and, you know, just to have a custom planter to come around and, you know, replace what you've done. It takes a lot of education, a lot of psychological change on your whole farming operation. But this past year, the farms that we worked with on irrigated corn and soybeans and row crops that other farmers didn't have a corn planter. This farm had always done a lot of custom planting and also planting alfalfa hay and just, you know, we accepted that fact that this farm was a custom planter, and it's to our benefit because everyone that had this done are just saying that they're so glad that they chose to go with the bioactive method on new stands of alfalfa hay. They've never seen it established so well and grow so quickly. And then the corn plant fields, it grew right through these salty areas. They've never had a corn plant ever grow there before. So, you know, these are things that now we have the sixth generation. We're right at that sweet spot of getting prepared to scale. And, you know, you have to accept every farm family is making their income from off, you know, the other custom work that they may do. And at the very beginning, though, we were quite cautious of that, because if you don't understand something new and innovative, you don't really, see the benefit because you got it kind of for free. And, you know, this is really not a free system. It does cost for the equipment. It does take time to get training about how it would work, because it's all agriculture is psychology. It's what our family has believed, and we practice that. And that's good, because once a farmer understands our method, they're onto it and they believe it and they practice it.
Yeah, I like that quote, agriculture is psychology. That's a good one. So how about your biological inoculant? I'm assuming you sell that, or is that something somebody could brew up themselves? How does that work?
Well, the starter is a engineered starter. It's a necessity to start out with the right inoculant, and we manufacture that so that every farmer is putting that into the RO water so that when this tractor starts up, it's got the right culture. And that the pH and the heat in the fusion tank, it only allows the beneficial microbes to thrive in there. Any pathogen can't stand the pH or the temperature. And so then when a farmer is farming, going across their field every day, they're taking this culture out of the culturing tank and putting it into a separate, culturing tank so that they can store up every day. They could actually potentially store up 1,000 liters. So from 1,000 liters, which would do 1,000 acres, the farmer can produce 10,000 liters of this cultured carbon water that then they can spray that on at different growth stages in their crop. And that's what we're encouraging our farmers to do, is to get culture back into agriculture. And that's really what we're missing in agriculture. It's all the ag industry that is taking our cash out the farm gate to buy products to bring in. And, you know, we're in the energy business now, and we're exporting just out the farm gate. And that's what we're trying to help our farms just get a starter. It's like a sourdough bread or whatever. You would share that culture and it would go on and on. And so the start of the year, you would start with the right culture and then try and repeat it maybe 10 times. And that's really what puts the value to this for farms, to have something to really push the plants throughout the season.
I'm assuming you've done some analysis on this cultured water, you know, after it's gone through the system. What are you seeing for, you know, carbon levels, nitrogen levels, things like that in the actual water?
We've tested, complete minerals, because we're always looking for heavy metals. So it has zinc, copper, iron, magnesium, calcium. All the plant nutrients are in the diesel fuel or the biodiesel, depending on what kind of plant it is. And so from that, then there's nitrogen, because combustion of engines make nitrate nitrogen. There could be a bit of ammonium in there, a bit of phosphorus, depending on what that plant was. And then from that, we've tested the bacteria, the fungi, and we've tested the cultures to see if they survive the going around the field in this fusion tank. And then it does reculture again, to very similar to what that starter was. And that's really, there's many, many things yet to be researched to really find out. And we're very interested now in using the same fuel that the plant is. So growing canola, we would use canola oil. And growing soybeans, you might use soybean oil, and corn oil. That's our curiosity right now, because, you know, plants put all those minerals into their seed when they're growing. And that could be the key to pushing this further. And we're very excited about canola. We did this and we got up to 1,000 pods on canola. And that's really what's exciting, is we can now have a bit more insight into what's going on here when we oxidize this organic matter from plants.
So curious where you're at on like production capacity for these units. So let's say I'm a farmer in Iowa and I want to buy one of these. I mean, are they available right now, or where are you at on that?
They really are available around the world. We have, you know, exported to Australia. We've supported farmers in Australia and in Africa, down in Panama. And so, you know, across America, it's not hard to get these kits onto farms. We have farms that just started up in North Dakota and down in California and in Idaho, and we've worked across Montana. Our factory is putting a kit together that's more, you know, everything is in it. We know pretty well every tractor, every make of seeder. It's got to be that the farmer has to engage in the installation, be involved with our install crew, and or we could do this as a do-it-yourself kit. We are going to have to move that way, because, you know, we can't travel the world to be on every farm and across Europe as well. So that's really where we have engineers now, you know, in our assembly line, getting it to the point where it can be one package and you receive this and put it on your tractor and set it up. But right today across Canada, we have an install crew that goes and installs it on the farm, and support is very important as well after sale. And, you know, just hopefully the borders between our countries and around the world open up for agriculture. It doesn't matter if it's moving food now, grains, this world has to open up, because we got 10 billion people to feed, and we as agriculture has to have that freedom to move around and feed the world.
Great. So just kind of wrapping up the conversation here, covered a lot of ground there, a lot of things for people to think about. Anything that I missed that you'd want to discuss before we wrap it up?
Yeah, I think, Brian, we pretty much covered a lot of stuff. We do have a Zoom every Thursday at 8 o'clock Mountain Standard Time, Mountain Daylight Time yet. So that if anyone's interested, definitely reach out to us at bioactive.com. And It is innovative. It's extreme agriculture. And that's what makes it fun. Extreme sports are fun. And that's really what agriculture is about, is getting into the extreme, understanding what makes it tick. And I think this agriculture is really what we need to explore, the culture of agriculture. It's all about the living and the dynamics of it. It's not really straight line stuff, is it?
No, that's for sure. So Gary, thanks so much for being on the podcast today and sharing your thoughts about the bioactive system. As you mentioned, if you're interested in learning more, you can go to bioactive.com. That's bioagtiv.com. I'll post that in the show notes as well. And you can also follow Gary's work on Facebook under Bioactive Emissions Technology. You've been listening to the Engineering Your Farm podcast.